And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Hello, and welcome to the program for March 5th, 2024, which in the Hebrew calendar we count as the 25th of the month of Adar 1, 5, 7, 8, 4. Regular listeners to this program will have noted my absence for several weeks. The reason? I was again on one of my travels under the auspices of that great organization, March of the Living, MOTL, best known for organizing trips to Auschwitz. They do, however, much more in the field of Holocaust education, like, for instance, promoting knowledge of the Kindertransport that brought many thousands of Jewish children to the UK some 85 years ago. This time, my destination was London to speak on that subject at three of the MOTL events. God willing, on Yom HaShoah in May, I shall again travel with MOTL, this time to Auschwitz. So you see that my various absences from home are for the purpose of publicizing recent Jewish history and promoting our country. Today's program will deal mainly with some aspects of current international events, particularly the Iran deception, and also an analysis of the American pre-election circus. There is no doubt that successive U.S. administrations saw Israel as their most important ally in the Middle East, and that includes the current Democratic White House, headed by President Biden. Whether it is actually he who is in fact conducting his country's policy is widely discussed in political circles. In just less than 9 months, the United States of America will elect its next president, and that fact determines and heavily influences all of their internal strategy, but also how foreign policy is conducted. Following their fiasco in Afghanistan, their focus has shifted to the turmoil in the Middle East and its principal source, the Islamic Republic of Iran, whose aim is to exercise hegemony over the whole area and bring it under the influence of Islam. America's major ally in the Middle East, the Jewish state of Israel, with its economic and military strength, is one of Iran's main obstacles to achieving this aim. For years, the Iranians have worked hard towards becoming a nuclear state, but concerted Western economic sanctions have so far prevented them from reaching the point of employing advanced centrifuges to enrich uranium to the necessary 90% for nuclear weapons. In April 2015, a nuclear deal was reached with Iran, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JPOA. Under this framework, Iran agreed tentatively to accept restrictions on its nuclear program, all of which would last for at least a decade or more and allow increased intensity of international inspections under the deal. In exchange, the Obama administration secretly arranged a delivery by plane of $400 million in cash on the same day that Iran released 4 American prisoners and formally implemented the nuclear deal. The money was flown to Tehran on wooden pallets stacked with Swiss francs, euros and other currencies as the first installment of a $1.7 billion settlement to resolve claims that emanate from a case in the International Tribunal at The Hague over a failed arms deal from the time of the Shah, as it is a highly unusual procedure to settle debts between states by cash. It can be safely assumed that much of the money will have been used for illicit purposes to reward and finance its terrorist proxies in their war against Israel. Hezbollah, who operates from southern Lebanon and are led by their Secretary General Hassan Nasrallah, and also the terrorist group Hamas in Gaza, under their leader Ismail Haniyeh, who since about 2006 resides in Doha, the capital of Qatar, in great luxury. One of the negotiators of that shameful deal was the then Secretary of the U.S. Treasury, Jacob Joseph Lew, who is today the American ambassador to the State of Israel. He is as suitable for this job like a fox in a henhouse. Probably with the aid of such money, Iran has been able to enroll the Houthis to attack Western shipping traversing the Red Sea, causing shipping to route around the Horn of Africa to reach destinations in the Southern Hemisphere, and vice versa. The Houthis are officially known as the Ansar Allah movement, a Shia political and military organization that emerged from Yemen in the 1990s. Their attacks results in higher costs for time and fuel that will affect the price of merchandise for the consumer. All that is conducted by Iranian advisors, and the weapons are supplied by Tehran. Such is the spread of Iranian influence today. But although Hezbollah has thousands of sophisticated rockets pointing at all major centers in Israel, it does not want to escalate the restricted skirmishes about border disputes into a major war, because they know quite well that, like Hamas, they can be similarly destroyed, and in the process they will drag modern Lebanon into the abyss. Similarly, the Houthis are already feeling the American power and may eventually make their cost-benefit analysis and consider to abandon Iran. So, without the help of their satellite fighters and straining under the imposed sanctions and no nuclear weapons, Iran would be in no position to defeat America and Israel. General Eisenhower's philosophy summed up what should be Israel's aim today when he said, "Our real problem is not our strength today, it is rather the vital necessity of action today to ensure our strength tomorrow." So much for a quick look at Iran's transient power. Empires come and empires fall. The land of the brave and the home of the free is no longer living up to its motto. America's 21st century champion of these ideals is being stifled and placed into a proverbial straitjacket. Former U.S. President Donald J. Trump has been the center of legal wrangling, accusing him of having caused an insurrection when on January the 6th, 2020, at a Save America rally, he gave a speech in which he repeated claims of election irregularities and said, "If you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore." He also said, "I know that everyone here will be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard." That last sentence has been omitted from most reports, yet it is alleged that because of his speech, mobs broke into the U.S. Congress building and went on the rampage and caused considerable damage. Congress personnel had to flee, fearing attack. As if that is not enough, to try and prevent Trump from standing for the presidency in the November election, there is also the case of the classified documents. In November 2022, U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland of the Biden administration appointed special counsel Jack Smith to examine the case against former U.S. President Donald Trump, already opened by the Justice Department. As the basis of this case, Trump is accused of violating the Espionage Act by illegally holding on to 31 classified documents containing national defense information after he left the White House in January 2021. Prosecutors also charged Trump and two others with a conspiracy to obstruct the government's repeated attempts to reclaim the classified material from his Mar-a-Lago resort. Smith's team claimed that Trump directed one of his personal aides to move the boxes so that the FBI and security forces, and allegedly Trump's own lawyers, would not discover some of the classified material. Prosecutors also claim that Trump showed classified documents on at least two occasions to individuals who were not authorized to view them. During those meetings, Trump allegedly showed off a classified Pentagon document about attacking Iran. It was captured in an audio recording, and Trump can be heard describing the material as secret. The classified documents allegedly in Trump's possession included White House intelligence briefings, communications with foreign leaders, assessments of U.S. and foreign countries' military capabilities, and reports on military activities. Trump faces multiple charges concerning willful retention of national defense information in violation of the Espionage Act, while others are related to obstructing justice and making false statements. Under the Espionage Act, it is a crime to retain records containing sensitive national security information, and he was charged on June the 9th and pleaded not guilty at an arraignment in Miami. In July, the special counsel added three more felony charges. It's remarkable that President Biden denounced Trump for harboring classified documents in his home, yet it was since found that Biden also has classified material on his premises, some of which was haphazardly stored in his garage and freely accessible. That undoubtedly is reason for an in-depth investigation leading to prosecution, particularly as some of the documents date back to the time when Biden was a senator, whereas Trump, as the president, was entitled to declassify documents. It is thought that the reasons why Biden has so far not been charged is the upheaval, confusion and uncertainty in the Democratic establishment so short before the presidential election. The far-left Democratic establishment is protecting Biden because he is their choice as presidential nominee because he is easy to manipulate. That amounts to weaponization of justice for short-term political gain. Biden's regular so-called gaffes are rather serious memory lapses and a sign of MCI, mild cognitive impairment, the early stage of memory loss and other cognitive ability, such as language or spatial perception. All are symptoms publicly observed. The White House is trying to explain all that as the normal behavior of a sympathetic old man with poor memory. That condition raises doubts about Biden's ability to conduct presidential business for another 4 years. It is very transparent that the conduct of the United States Department of Justice amounts to clear weaponization of the judiciary so close before a general election. in yet another case against Trump for causing an insurrection on January the 6th, Fulton County of the state of Georgia is claiming a fine of $400 million. The case actually looks like collapsing because of alleged collusion between the state attorney general and the prosecutor. It must be said that in this case, there were no victims whatsoever, and no one suffered financial loss. It was simply a case to damage Trump's reputation and to establish disqualification as presidential candidate. More proof of weaponization by the Department of Justice. The U.S. election circus has only just begun, and we can expect more surprises from both sides of their political divide. I have, however, every confidence and no doubt at all that whoever will occupy the Oval Office after November the 5th this year, whether Biden, Trump, or anyone else, will be fully aware that while Israel relies heavily on American support, the military and economic strength of Israel is the primary U.S. asset in the Middle East, and that both countries need each other. Now to nearer home, where our Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, backed by the government, is repeatedly strongly resisting heavy pressure by much of the international community to agree to the absurd demand for a permanent humanitarian ceasefire in light of the situation that the Gazan population finds itself in. Israel will no longer be sacrificed on the altar of humanitarianism, protecting those who raped and tortured our women and burned our children alive on October the 7th. The world also fails to question the Hamas claim of more than 30,000 of their innocent civilians killed, while Israel states that at least 12,000 were Hamas and Islamic Jihad terrorists, and many others Hamas sympathizers, supporters, and UNRWA operatives. Defense Minister Gallant said, "We have unique solutions to the Hamas tunnel threat. The terrorists have two alternatives, either surrender unconditionally or die in the tunnels. There is no third alternative." Of course, we must not lose sight of the 130 Israelis who are still held by terrorists as hostages, and I'm sure that the government leaves no stone unturned to discover their location and to free them. However, the whole country is at one in the opinion that we must continue the war until every terrorist in Gaza is dead or has experienced his last day of freedom. It seems to me that the U.S. Secretary of State Blinken spends more time shuttling to Israel to lecture us than to deal with other important U.S. matters of state, and is more concerned about the U.S. citizens among the hostages than the total defeat of the Hamas terror regime. He has already expressed his government's plan to install the PA, the Palestinian Authority, to rule over the whole of Gaza. Even just to suggest this is an insult to all of us. Do they really think that Israel spilled the blood of its bravest and best in order to replace one terror regime with another that financially rewards the killers of Jews and their families? As for the proverbial day after, I refer you to the way the Western powers dealt with the Germans after they were defeated in May 1945. For the first years, they were occupied by the military until every trace of the previous regime was denazified. That was followed by the Civilian Allied Control Commission for Germany, and then and only then were German civilians introduced into government. Gaza must be dealt with similarly. The whole of Gaza must, of course, be incorporated into sovereign Israel so that a large part can again be settled by Jews. Under no circumstances can we allow the PA or any other entity, Arab or Western, to again control the Gaza Strip. With that thought, I end for today. Until we meet again, this is Walter Bingham wishing you a safe and peaceful week, and may the hostages come home healthy and well. And thank you to our heroes who risked their lives to keep us safe. A big, big thank you. Please also visit your elderly neighbors, many of whom may be Holocaust survivors. Others fought in wars, either in Israel or abroad, so that we can have a Jewish state that will defend Jews wherever they live. Thank you. Goodbye.